Working Cows Podcast, episode 54.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, your host of the Working Cows Podcast, here again with another episode. We are talking today with Taryn Dreeling of Faith, Family, and Beef. Taryn is a self-described wife, mother, food safety enthusiast, and Stormy Cromer fanatic. Her and her husband live on a ranch in western Nebraska. Tom helps manage a ranch, and she is there as a wife and a mother, doing everything that she can to continue to help that family succeed in the ranching industry. And we're going to talk to her more about what that looks like on a day-to-day basis. So, Taryn, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
So you have a website called Faith, Family, and Beef, which will be linked at the show notes page at workingcows.net/54. And people can go there and check out some of your writings and recipes and photography and different things like that. What is the mindset behind Faith, Family, and Beef?
Well, it actually goes back to 2009 when I was working at a corporate feed yard, and social media was still kind of in the baby stages. Like, Facebook was around, but it was still pretty new. And I don't think Instagram was born yet. And maybe Twitter was around, but I don't use Twitter. But I was already seeing this huge disconnect between the people growing the food and the people eating the food. And I had been, I mean, that's kind of a sign of a healthy economy and a growing, happy, healthy society, right? We have been removed from agriculture for generations because we've been able to diversify and do different things, and we don't have to focus all of our attention on growing our own food. So I saw this disconnect, and as way back in 2009, and as social media started to grow, I saw how much bigger that disconnect was getting and how much more misinformation was being thrown out there. And I really just had this passion to help people become as comfortable and confident in beef as I am, and I'm pretty comfortable and confident in it. So while I was working full-time at the feed yard, I had the opportunity to take the Masters of Beef Advocacy class that's sponsored by the Beef Checkoff, but it kind of helps producers and people within the beef industry learn how to talk to people removed from beef. So I took that, and then from there, I just, anytime I had the opportunity to have a conversation in the grocery store, I took it. And I even started writing a little article for the local newspaper called The Beef Bite, but I couldn't do anything full-time like I'm doing now with Faith, Family, and Beef, because obviously the feedlot was full-time. But really, it just stemmed from wanting to help people understand beef. And so when my husband got the opportunity and offer for his dream job, and he took it, I stayed on at the feed yard for a little while longer, but then I ultimately couldn't handle the drive and the long hours because it was 45 miles one way. So I made the decision to quit my job at the feed yard, and it allowed me the time to start Faith, Family, and Beef. That was kind of a long answer to your question.
No, it's good. Very good. What was your takeaway from the, is it Masters in Beef Advocacy? Is that right?
Yep. Masters of Beef Advocacy.
What was your takeaway from that experience?
At the time, it's changed now, and I haven't taken the 2.0, but at the time it was 6 courses and they were online on your own, and it went through each stage of the beef industry from pasture to plate, and it helped like pinpoint some key areas where consumers had confusion and helped me learn how to relay that message and help consumers understand better without using a whole bunch of industry jargon, and rather using words they can understand. And
that's still a really big deal, though, you know, the disconnect that you were talking about in the opening, and then also I think it's a big deal, the disconnect in the beef industry between the pasture and the plate. You know, a lot of times as ranchers who are raising that calf until it's ready to go on the truck or wean or whatever, there's a huge disconnect there between us and how that animal goes through the rest of its life cycle before it ends up on that plate. I think that's a big part of it. If we don't know how that process works, we can't share authoritatively with people who have questions.
Right. And that was one of the good things, or the really helpful things about the MBA, Masters of Beef Advocacy program, is that it takes you through each step along the way and kind of helps. Like, I feel pretty fortunate because I grew up on a feed yard. I studied feed yard management in college and worked in a corporate feed yard for more than 7 years before coming to the ranch. So I had, and I was married to Tom too, and he ranched and I did the feed yard thing. So I had experience through there, and then through college I had gone to a packing plant, and so I kind of knew every step, but the Masters of Beef Advocacy really just helped me brush up on areas of the entire process from pasture to plate that maybe I wasn't quite as familiar with. But I do feel pretty fortunate that I've had the opportunity to be, or at least see, every step of the way.
Sure. We're going to take a little bit of different approach on this interview. So I guess my next question might be a little bit of a left curveball, but you can blame Derek Schwanebeck if you want. he said he wanted to know, where do you see yourself in 20 years? That's after kids, right?
Yeah. So actually, I have some pretty big goals for Faith, Family, and Beef. The number one goal will always be to help people become as comfortable and confident in beef as I am, and give them a glimpse into ranch life and all things beef. But the number two goal is to earn a little money doing Faith, Family, and Beef. Like right now, I have in the online shop some hats and shirts and some steak rub that's pretty dang delicious. But the goal is to earn enough income from that we can start saving up and buy our own ranch, because right now we work for a large ranch in the Sandhills here. And then I like to tell people it's as close to owning your own place as you can get to owning your own place without taking on any of the risk, which why would we want to give that up? But isn't the dream always to have something of your own?
Absolutely. Very cool. One of my own questions is, and I think we could spend the rest of the time on this one, but what has stockmanship taught you, or what has good stockmanship or bad stockmanship taught you about marriage?
Oh my gosh. So much. I actually wrote a piece called Good Movement Draws Good Movement, and it was when I was really frustrated with the state of things, not in my marriage, but just with the state of things like in society in general, and especially on social media. And I was talking about how in stockmanship we have this phrase that we say good movement draws good movement, and it's where you can take one pair or a handful of yearlings and move them through the gate and draw hundreds or the rest of the herd through the gate along with them. And how we do that is by reading body language and talking in a way that, or communicating to our cattle in a way that they understand and they can understand us and what we're asking of them, and how that can also apply to humans. And so, yeah, I use that. I use stockmanship every day. You know, like everything that an animal does is in direct relation to something I've done. And I always try to relate that back to people, whether it's in my marriage or just anywhere.
Yeah, we could use a lot more good movement in our culture, yes, in our interactions with one another, like you said, especially on social media, where anonymity, the ability to not have to look someone in the eye through your interactions, will oftentimes lead people to say things that they wouldn't say otherwise, and some of those different considerations that we don't often take into account when it's just a keyboard that's looking back at us.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
I really appreciated a couple of the posts, you know, the habits that quite literally saved our marriage. And then the other one that kind of was the precursor to that, about how you guys, or how stockmanship has influenced your relationship, or just understanding good communication practices has been a lifesaver.
Yeah. Those habits, I'm not joking. They literally saved us. If we hadn't implemented those habits and adopted them and used them like we do, there would be no Mr. and Mrs. Tom and Taryn Dreeling.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's not unique. It's not a stress that's unique only to ranch families, but do you think that the ranch family, or being on a ranch, has added to that stress, or was it just the nature of a lack of good communication?
So actually, that all happened. Our stint in roommate mode happened before we were on the ranch together. So I was working at the feed yard full time, and he was working on a ranch full time. And the problem really stemmed from, we had just had our son, and I had my priorities all messed up. Like, I mean, my dad, he told me, he's like, when you find the person you're going to marry, you need to put that person first. You know, you need to put God first, and then that person, and then everyone. Like, your family comes after that. Even your kids come after that. But your spouse needs to be first, right after God. And I just got away from that when we had our son, and I was working full-time and trying to manage being a new mom and taking care of the baby, and I was putting the baby first and not Tom. And I think at that point it was kind of the baby, Tom, then God. So I was really messed up. But we were really in roommate mode, and it wasn't even the friendly kind of roommates. We were fighting all the time, and finally he was working with a couple that were doing, they called it life group, but it was like a different Bible study for however many weeks, and then they'd kind of just do a different one, rotate through them, and they invited him to come, and we had no idea what we were getting into, but I was like, we got to do something. He's like, they said it might help us out, and I was like, okay, I'm game, let's do it. So we went, and it was the Love Dare. And I mean, that's where we learned all of those habits. And it's been, I mean, like, I'm not going to say that we never disagree or argue or even full on fight anymore, but it is nothing like it used to be. It's great now. It's really great. Even we had a little bit there when I did come to the ranch full time, where we were still working the kinks out of being together all the time, but it's been really great the past, I don't know, 8 years, trip's eight now. So 8 years since we did the Love Dare.
Cool. Good stuff. Yeah. The Love Dare is a good one. What does putting God first look like in the Dreeling household?
Well, for me, I can't speak for Tom because I don't know exactly how that all works for him. But for me, every morning when I wake up, or I try to every morning, sometimes I don't get out of bed in time and I got to rush to get the kids to the bus. But I try to, like right now I'm doing or reading Jesus Calling every day. And I just spend time, whether I read Jesus Calling in the morning or not, I spend time throughout the day just not maybe talking out loud, but always talking in my head to God, like, thanking him and asking him what the next step for me is, or what the next moment looks like, or asking for signs. Like, for the latest, biggest sign he gave me was, I wrote, over the course of about a week, I wrote a little prayer about, please don't let me forget all the things in motherhood and how my kids have blessed me. And I put it up on Labor Day. I posted it on Facebook on Labor Day. And I, at that point, I was in one of those lulls where I was really disgusted with how social media looked and how society was looking very ugly. And I was like, is it even worth it for me to keep going with this faith, family, and belief and sharing our life on the internet? And I prayed and I asked him for a sign whether or not I should keep at it. And I posted, or I put it up, and I walked away. And that has been the most viral thing that I've ever written. And I, like, thousands and thousands of moms and parents have read it and it's resonated with them. And I, if that's not a sign, I don't know what is. So I just, I don't know, I kind of get goosebumps talking about it because I asked for a sign and he gave it to me almost immediately.
Very cool. How is ranch life different throughout the year for you guys? I mean, changing seasons and different things like that. What kind of challenges does it present to the family and in the different seasons that you guys are working through?
So the beginning of the year, like through Christmas and into the first part of the year, is our slow time. And then we get busy because we work on a larger ranch. So there's different units and we go help the other units with like vaccinations in the spring or pre-calving. And then calving season starts the first part of May. And so May through the end of June is calving season and spring work and brandings. And then we get into August and September preconditioning. And now this time of year, they're starting to preg all the herds on all the different units. And so Tom's gone quite a bit, or not so much this fall, but in falls past, I've gone and pregged too, but more Tom this year. And so then I'm here taking care of our herds, moving solars and cattle and fencing. Fencing is not my favorite.
I always said my brother and I were a good pair because he hated irrigation and all things farming, and I really didn't have much time for fencing, so it fit. I understand how that goes.
We got into a pretty good groove this last spring. Before and then we took a break during calving, and then after, like July, August, we'd go together, and one of us would drive the Pioneer or the side-by-side, and the other would walk the fence. So I get afraid when I drive the Pioneer up and down some of the hills that we have, so I would rather have Tom do that, so I would walk. And then I'd pull a broken post and set it along the fence, and then he'd come along and put posts in with the fencing trailer. It's a lot better than fencing by yourself. That's all I can say.
Yeah, there's a lot of walking backwards past stuff you already covered in fencing by yourself.
Yes.
So here's another Derek Schwanebeck curveball. What's the best part about Tom?
What's the best part about Tom?
I feel weird asking that question, but that's Derek told me to.
Well, okay. So on paper, we are exactly opposite, he and I. Like, every personality test that we've ever taken, we are polar opposites. And that is the best thing about him. Like, he keeps me grounded, and he's the reality check that I need sometimes. And he's also the kick in the pants motivation that I need sometimes. And he calls me an incurable optimist. And so I use that on him sometimes when he needs it. So I think we kind of balance each other out pretty well.
That's a good one. It's a good fit. What's coming up for Faith, Family, and Beef? What are you thinking?
Well, it seems like the summer there's always a lull. I mean, with my writing, because we're calving and doing lots of ranch work, May through about August when school starts again, but also a lull in visitors to the page or to the site because I think everyone else is using their summer break to do other things than sit at their computer, which is awesome. But so I've gotten some motivation back and time to write again. And today actually is the history of FFB going up on the blog, which just basically walks through how it all started or kind of what I said or how I answered your first question. And then that should have gone up yesterday, but life happened and I didn't get it done. But tomorrow there will be another post going up that is a French dip sandwich out of leftover pot roast. I'm on a leftover pot roast kick, so there's a bunch of new recipes with what to do with leftover pot roast up there. Next month will be my annual favorite things rundown with all of the things that I love, and like it's an annual gift guide that I do, so there'll be a bunch of stuff that I enjoy on there. But yeah, other than that, we're going to, oh, so I'm working on an e-cookbook for Tom's Steak Rub. So anyone who buys a bottle of Steak Rub will get the e-cookbook for free. And I think that I have set 15 recipes using Tom's Steak Rub because it's really a seasoning for more than just steak. So pretty excited about that. It should hopefully be out the first part of next month also.
I really appreciate your time today, Taryn. Anything else you wanted to share? Anything else we didn't cover? I mean, we're talking life here, so obviously, but...
No, I just really appreciate you having me on, and check out faithfamilyandbeef.com and buy a bottle of Steak Rub while you're at it.
Sure. Score some recipes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for your time, and we will send people directly to the link for the Steak Rub for sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Good stuff there with Taryn. Really appreciate her taking the time to join me today on the Working Cows podcast. Good discussion, good perspective. Really appreciate some of her thoughts. So next week is 1 year since I launched the Working Cows podcast with those three episodes, that introductory episode, episode one with Mary Jo Ehrman, and episode two with Dallas Mount all came out on the same day. 1 year ago next week, the first Monday in November. So we are going to revisit that with a little bit different episode than we've ever done here on the Working Cows podcast. So I hope that you will join me again for that, and send me some feedback about what you think about next week's episode. We will see you next week for episode 55 of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.